corner and, you know, somebody has hot food and just take the food and walk off, and I don't have to get my name, rank, or social security number to get it.
And yes, lots of fire for you today on Free Radio Santa Cruz. 2.5 hours of it, in fact. We're going to begin with a report from Modesto, California, where apparently San Jose officials have been dumping homeless people from San Jose that they don't want in their city. I'm referring to an article from the Modesto Bee, and since most of us don't get the Modesto Bee, we wouldn't have read this article, but due to the miracle of radio and the fax machine, I've got it here for you. There was a small article about this in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about a week ago, actually less, 4 or 5 days ago, regarding this practice, mentioning that San Jose officials were, in fact, directing homeless families to Modesto, and then when they got there, they found a wretched slum that they were in the middle of and they couldn't even pay for. I'll read you this story from the Modesto Bee, dated October 3rd, from San Jose to Modesto, Bay Area homeless planting roots at city complex. San Jose housing officials steered as many as 30 homeless families to a West Modesto apartment complex, a move that has inflamed racial tensions and angered Modestans who think San Jose should help its poor closer to home. The families, residents of San Jose shelters, motels, and burned-out houses, moved to 620 Paradise Road over the summer. Most of the transplanted residents interviewed Friday said the San Jose Homeless Coordinator's Office recommended the apartment complex. Some said the city also helped them arrange money for the rent deposit. "I've been pretty anxious and upset about this whole thing," said Steve Young, Modesto's housing and neighborhoods manager. "We would obviously like to see them stop this homeless dumping. I don't know if anyone told them you can't get a job here without skills," said Young, who spent Thursday and Friday making calls to San Jose. "It's pretty outrageous when you think about it. San Jose is rolling in money." Homeless families who can't find work, Young said, will become wards of the county. As of Friday, however, the County Community Services Agency hadn't logged any surge in aid requests from San Jose transplants. San Jose's homeless coordinator didn't return calls Friday. San Jose officials learned of the Modesto complex when apartment owner Vern Stark, who bought the complex 2 years ago, had his apartment manager write the city of San Jose about his rentals. The manager's April 17th letter notes $1 million in apartment improvements and lists the advantages of living at 620 Paradise. Stark defends his invitation. "We're taking care of the homeless, and we're pretty proud of that," said Stark, a longtime Stanislaus County entrepreneur who lives off-site but knows most of his 500 tenants by face or by name. "We're not just talking about helping the homeless. We're not just talking about helping the homeless in Stanislaus County. Rents in San Jose are well over $1,000 per month. Paradise Village rents 2-bedroom units for $425 per month. Since I've been here, I've been able to pay for my rent, my lights, my phone and cable," said tenant Blanche Martin, a babysitter and senior citizen caretaker. She moved here in May after her house burned down in San Jose. The 172 Paradise Village apartments have a colorful and turbulent past, including open hostility between the owner and the city of Modesto. City staffers now are trying to arrange the sale, demolition, and reconstruction of the complex's 18 bluish-gray buildings. Cambodians formed a tight community at Paradise Village when they moved in 10 to 20 years ago. The neighborhood includes Cambodian markets, a Buddhist temple, and an elementary school. Cambodian tenants often plant shrubs and gardens in the few square feet between their doors and walkways. Stark said about 40 Cambodian families recently moved to Gateway Village, a more modern complex on Paradise Road. He said that the homeless families took over many of the units vacated by Gateway tenants. The new families, most of which are Hispanic and African American, said they have unwittingly run into problems with their Cambodian neighbors. They reported car burglaries, broken apartment windows, and spats with teenagers. Some said they had gotten angry enough to call the police. Others said they had been left alone completely. Meanwhile, Stark said 620 Paradise has become home to a Cambodian gang called CMF. Stark said he's trying to evict 7 people he suspects of committing crimes. He's also posting signs accusing CMF members of getting their mothers evicted and suggesting they call 800 losers. Graffiti on a few apartment walls reads, "Fuck the employer." Cambodians said Friday they know nothing about the CMF and resent Stark for blaming the apartment complex's problems on them. It's not only the Cambodians. A lot of ethnic groups are there. How can you blame only one, said Chantha Nau, a former tenant who goes back to visit. Since the beginning, we got along with the Mexicans, blacks, and whites. It wasn't bad before. Right now, I don't know what happened. Some of the new tenants said they aren't happy with the dusty yard, the dirty carpets, or the people making noise after midnight. Tony and Diane Freitas went to move back to San Jose. They and their three children spent a week in Paradise Village apartment where they found cockroaches and smelled cat urine, Tony Freitas said. The couple felt deceived by the letter Paradise Village sent to San Jose. Michaela Duarte's formerly homeless family, however, has run into few problems at 620 Paradise. Duarte said her husband had found a job, and police are constantly patrolling her street front apartment. Still, because she's heard early morning gunshots, she's afraid to live there. This is an October 3rd story from the Modesto Bee about homeless dumping. Well, about 16 days or 2 weeks more or less later, there was a second story in the Modesto Bee called Mystery, Who Sent Homeless to Modesto by Ralph Jennings, Bee staff writer. That story reads like this. A schism between the city of San Jose and a group of angry, miserable West Modesto tenants who say the city sent them there has triggered two investigations and strained several relief agencies. Defiant San Jose city officials say their laws forbid sending homeless people to Modesto. But numerous new Modestans who once lived in San Jose shelters and motels say the city suggested they move here. Over the past 6 months, about 30 families from San Jose have moved to the 172-unit apartment complex at 620 Paradise Road, said apartment owner Vern Stark. Many tenants say the assistant to the San Jose City Housing Coordinator recommended the apartments, called Paradise Village, as a way to escape high rents in the South Bay. Stark said that in April, his manager sent the city a letter advertising his 172-unit complex. That is an odd situation, said San Jose Housing Director Alex Sanchez. It is not a city problem or policy. Ruben Avalos, the homeless coordinator's assistant, has declined to return calls placed over 3 days. Tenants often name Avalos when describing how they got to Modesto. That, of course, would be more like 19 days, because this is between two stories when he was also refusing to return calls. Modesto Housing and Neighborhoods Manager Steve Young said Avalos told him he did refer people here but stopped when he realized this month that people were unhappy at 620 Paradise. But Sanchez says tenants may have confused the city with a homeless services agency unaffiliated with City Hall. Clearly, someone's attracting people into Modesto, he said. Earlier this month, the San Jose City Manager wrote Modesto City Manager Ed Tews a letter saying nothing could be further from the truth, or perhaps nothing could be further from the truth than unsolicited referrals from her city offices to Modesto. But despite denials from over the hill, people in charge of social services in Modesto aren't sure what to believe. Tews and Stanislaus County's Community Service Agency have launched their own inquiries into why so many San Jose homeless people suddenly moved to Paradise Village. Tenants are sticking by their story and elaborating on them as they realize 620 Paradise is no paradise. He goes, look, Joanne, in Modesto, it's a lot cheaper, tenant Joanne Pina said, recalling a conversation with Avalos. He said, if you expose me, I'm in trouble. I'm saying, well, what are you trying to hide? People such as Pina report unbearable living conditions in their new apartments, which have long been popular with Southeast Asian families. Children have been hurt in fistfights, and cars have been burglarized. Tenants also note urine and cockroaches on the carpets. One tenant reportedly found that a mouse had bitten the nipple off a baby's bottle. Based on the note Paradise Village sent to San Jose, they expected better. We were totally deceived by San Jose, but I don't want to be homeless, nor do I want to stay in this area, said Diane Freitas, a mother of three, so what are we to do? Freitas has a referral note with a signature she says belongs to Avalos. Other families say they expected a privately funded charity in San Francisco to pay their rent deposits, but after moving to Modesto, they found out they didn't qualify for the aid. Others have gone begging for blankets and kitchenware. Requests for safer lodging and furnishings or just the need for a friendly ear have touched three Modesto organizations, the Bridge Community Center, the United Way of Stanislaus County, and Community Housing and Shelter Services. It's created a real big problem, said Carla Emig, site coordinator of the Bridge, which rents a space at 620 Paradise. They're tapped out, don't know where to go, and so they come in upset every afternoon, and I feel upset. There's so many children involved. Stanislaus County Community Services Agency Director Jeff Ju said he's putting together a document trail that might indicate whether anyone from the city of San Jose or the county of Santa Clara sent homeless people here. He said his staff can handle any of San Jose's welfare recipients, but that out-of-town social service workers normally would mention a move of 30 homeless families. It could be innocent, Jew said. Paradise Road has a nice ring to it. Well, in order to track down some more of this story in the Modesto Bee about homeless dumping from San Jose to Modesto, which is a town kind of east of the East Bay, southwest of Sacramento and Stockton, sort of in the valley, I gave a call and spoke to a woman at the Union Gospel Church. Her name was Barbara Dethridge, and we're now going to hear an interview with her about the situation in Modesto. October 22nd, here we have Barbara Dethridge of the Union Gospel Mission coming up.
Hello, Barbara, this is Robert. I just spoke to Kevin.
Yeah.
I'm working with a HUF, a group called Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And we're here in Santa Cruz. We've read this series of stories about homeless dumping in Modesto, and we're trying to kind of get to the bottom of it. Do you have any insight into what's going on?
Well, I think even those involved are a little bit confused as to what's been happening, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that a landlord sent some rental information to the San Jose area, mm-hmm. and that people in San Jose, and of course, trying to pin down who those people are has been, I think, kind of hard even for the reporters here locally. But people in San Jose made that information available to those seeking shelter. And so consequently, we've ended up with some families here from the San Jose area in one of the apartment complexes locally.
Paradise?
Now, they're called the Paradise Apartments. I don't even know if that's really their name, but that's what they're known by anyway.
Paradise Village or something?
It's at 620 Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basics of the story. Beyond that, I think there was quite a bit of speculation as to whether or not it was what's termed homeless dumping. That's probably not a new term for you because it's one that's being used quite a bit now, actually.
Mm.
When one city sends their homeless to another city for that city to deal with it. Now, I don't know if that's really what has happened here. It kind of, like I said, even the reporters are having a little bit of a time trying to get to the bottom of what actually happened. It could be that, or it could be just that the rental information that was sent to San Jose was made available to people who were seeking shelter. So it could be either way, actually.
Now, if many people come from Paradise to your church looking for services?
Okay, first of all, in our church, we're a homeless shelter is what we are. We're a gospel mission.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
How many people do you serve?
Well, we can shelter 225 each night. We usually shelter a couple of thousand different individuals, men, women, boys, and girls, in a year's time.
Are you full up?
You have something similar to what we are over in Santa Fe. It's called City Team.
Uh-huh.
Familiar with City Team?
No, I'm not, but I'm in Santa Cruz, which is kind of a bit away from San Jose.
Right, and you did tell me Santa Cruz, but my ears heard it, but my mind registered San Jose.
San Jose is more your size. I guess you got, about 200,000, 250,000 people in Modesto?
We're right at 200,000, somewhere in there, yeah. In the area, in our county area, we must be around 260, something like that.
How many would you estimate homeless people that are present in the Modesto area?
Well,
that's a horrible thing to ask for.
No, that's all right. Well, it's really difficult. If you work with the homeless at all, you know that's a very difficult number to really come up with. And there are two definitions of homeless. For us, when we use definition homeless, we're talking about somebody who is shelterless. I mean, literally without shelter of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
But, let me get their name right now. It's not social services anymore. It's, good grief. What do social services call themselves now? Oh, gosh.
Human relate, HRA, maybe? I don't know.
It health and, no, oh, gosh. Sure. Anyway, I'll just call them social services until my mind can clear. They determine that people who are not living in their own place, they determine them to be homeless. So if you would have like an adult child living with their parents, that could conceivably be known as homeless.
Right. No, I'm looking more for the definition of, you know, the standard definition of homeless person without shelter, or
okay.
I guess you could say people couch surfing who have no real shelter
right.
might be homeless, but I'm looking more for the real standard stuff.
Okay, and for us, when we talk about it, we figure at any given time there's between 2,000 and 4,000.
Okay. And are there organizations in town that are concerned with, like, civil rights of homeless people, like ACLU or groups like that?
To my knowledge, we're the only emergency shelter.
so we can clear that up. Where, as far as services are concerned, we're at, there are others that are.
Others that are?
That would have programs for homeless.
Is there a group called Food Not Bombs in Modesto?
If there is, I'm unaware of them. And I'm not aware of anything that is working specifically with the homeless as far as their rights are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
We had, because of the publicity on the Paradise Road thing, we've had, I believe, three families that were in Santa Fe, came to Paradise, and now are feeling very insecure about even having a place in the Paradise apartments, and they came to us, and we do lots of resource referrals and counseling, for them to know where they can go and what they can do and stuff. And so we've given them lots of information. They're not shelterless now. They're not homeless now. But because of all this, they're feeling, I guess there's a whole feeling of very, that it's going to be a very transitory thing that has happened. They thought they were going to come live, and now they're feeling that maybe they aren't. So,
how many people have been, like, transferred from San Jose that you know of? The story says, what does it say? It's 30 families? I'm not sure.
Well, quite a few families who came. And whether or not that it was homeless dumping or not is what I'm not sure of. I don't know if it was homeless dumping or if it was simply a matter of what one of them said. I know at least one of them said that it was affordable housing, comparing the housing that was here to the housing that was available in Santa Fe.
Complaints about rats and gangs and violence and dirty carpets and...
At Paradise Apartments?
Yeah, this is according to the news stories from the Modesto Bee, which I'm looking at.
Well, the Paradise Apartments do not have a good reputation at all.
Right. I hear they're having kind of a fight with the city, and previously that's another thing that's mentioned in the article, and a large foreign ethnic population from Southeast Asia, I guess that's originally was directed to an organization called The Bridge, which I guess has to do with Cambodian folks.
Yes, and they deal mostly with those who are here from Asia. There's been a lot of problems with Paradise Apartments down through the years. Lots of news articles written about them, lots of attention paid to them, and it's been an ongoing thing locally.
I've also heard, Barbara, about this shopping cart controversy that happened at the last city council meeting where, I guess, they passed a $15,000... media blitz to encourage people to return their shopping carts, and they plan in January to descend on the city and remove everybody's shopping cart. What's your take on this? Is this a sort of an anti-homeless move? What do you think?
Well, again, I'm not being an advocate for the store owners, but I can see their position in that they pay a lot of money for the shopping carts and then they disappear and they're being used by, but I'm going to say they're not just used by the homeless, but you see people lots of time using them as transportation from even from a grocery store to their home, and then they don't really take it back quickly, and you're talking about, low-income people that don't have any kind of transportation.
Mm-hmm. Is there, Modesto is a pretty spread out city?
It is a more urban area, yes. It's not that we have a downtown, but our homeless really are pretty well spread out. There's not any really congregating area. There's a series of areas, of course, but you can see homeless throughout the city, whereas in some cities you see them only in one area, that kind of thing. I don't know if it's a matter of cracking down on the homeless. So far in this county, there's not been a lot of animosity shown by government entities toward the homeless.
I know some jurisdictions crack down around election time. It's kind of like, they'll pick up hookers and they'll go after drugs. It'll be sort of an election eve thing, I don't know if this is happening in Modesto or if this is even, what that is. Is it legal, for instance, to sleep in your vehicle in Modesto if you have no place to sleep?
I don't think that it's legal for you to park your car. I think that's the key right there. I think our streets are pretty well where you cannot park your car.
So you can't park your car after a certain hour.
Right, and so that, in effect, does that very thing right there.
So where do homeless people go? I mean, you say 200 beds, but there are 2,000 to 4,000 people. But where do the rest of them go?
Well, there's lots of different places. The Bridge, the reason that particular ministry was called The Bridge was it was started out to help people because around our 7th and 9th Street Bridge, which goes over the San Joaquin River that goes through, I'm sorry, the Tuolumne River that goes through here, there are homeless encampments there. And we have a place called Dry Creek, which is a very, very long area alongside some parkways and stuff, and there are homeless encampments there. We have a lot of city, county parks, lots of county parks. Our homes, like I said, they are not as visible because there are lots of areas. I know that lots of businesses say that they're sleeping like in doorways and that kind of thing. There's a little bit of every place.
I'm back.
That's all right. Like I said, you know, our county has not shown a lot of animosity. I know we are in contact with gospel missions all over the state, and boy, some even gospel missions are fighting for their right to even exist. To help the homeless, because it's that old NIMBY thing, you know, not in my backyard. And so usually, as long as the homeless are not creating a problem or a disturbance, and even though there are the ordinances around about, you know, not having cars parked just indiscriminately, usually they're not bothered, and that's a lot of what happens, too.
Uh-huh. And what about feeding programs? Are there a lot of feeding programs in town, or very few, or a little of both?
Of course, we're the biggest one, of course, but yes, there's lots of feeding programs around town. Salvation Army doesn't shelter, but they serve lunch every day. We serve two meals every day. Then on weekends, there's lots of organizations that do, you know, on Saturdays and Sundays, different places around. And there's, I can confidently say there's no reason for anybody to go hungry in this county.
Now in the winter, Barbara, are we talking cold times in Modesto, or?
Yeah, it gets cold. Usually starting around, we're pretty balmy through, lots of times even through November, but December, January, February is really nasty. It gets down in, you know.
So what do folks do? I mean, in effect, they can't go to the shelters because there aren't enough shelters, so do they leave? Do they hide? Do they go into squats and abandoned buildings? What's the usual approach?
They're all of the above, mm-hmm. All of that.
Is there much arresting of homeless people for trespass or, you know, sleeping in public places?
So far there doesn't happen to be. We were part of a study a couple of years ago because we were expanding. We just finished a huge expansion project about a year and a half ago. And, you know, trying to get a conditional use permit for the new building on the street that it was going to be on meant that we had to be a part of a lot of things. And that was one of the studies that was done, was how many arrests. Actually even how many complaints there were. And the complaints that happened, we expected a lot of them to be around our area, you know, because the homeless come for so many different services, all of them, you know, medical, all kinds of things. But there were some around where we were, but it was, again, was kind of spread out through the city, but not as many as we thought that there would be. And usually the complaint was not because they were doing anything bad. The complaint usually was because they were in people's garbage cans searching for recyclables.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that kind of freaks people out a little bit, scares them. And even then, people who were identified by homeowners as being homeless were not necessarily homeless, because a lot of low-income people do that very thing, you know, go out for recyclables and stuff.
Today is October 22nd, when I guess many cities are organizers protesting brutality by different police departments against the homeless in different cities. How do you see the Modesto Police Department in this?
I do not see any hostility. Our police department works closely with us and with other agencies, and they'll find somebody on the street at night, and they will bring them to us. I mean, they put them in the car and bring them over to the mission. I've not seen any hostility. We've done in-service training for officers to make them better aware of all the possibilities that they can do. There are things that they can do with the homeless rather than just thinking that it's an insurmountable problem. You know, what a big grief, what am I going to do with this homeless person?
Right. In and out here. So the police department, in your mind, is pretty good. If I wanted to talk to someone who, you know, has been homeless for a while and who maybe is...
And that was Barbara Deathridge of Union Gospel Mission in Modesto, California. She actually tried to hook me up with some local homeless folks without success. We called back and found that a guy had gone out and woke up a person on the street around 1 o'clock, and he claimed he hadn't been having any problems. Frankly, the problem with talking to social service providers, whether it's in Santa Cruz or in Modesto, is you tend to get a kind of a whitey kind of view. I don't just mean racist, or I mean it's whitewashed. You get a perspective of people who don't really, whose funding to some extent locally and from other people is dependent upon their maintaining an upbeat perspective. And there's nothing wrong with trying to be upbeat, but it's also important, I think, to be realistic about what's going on. I hope to get a report in the future from Modesto about actual from homeless activists or Food Not Bombs folks, who I think do have a group in Modesto that apparently she hasn't heard of. And we're going to talk about that. I did also catch a story from the Modesto Bee about the Modesto City Council, which is kind of interesting. Reads like this: City orders PR blitz on cart thefts. If people hear time and time again that running off with a shopping cart is against the law, they might not do it as much. That's the plan agreed on Tuesday by Modesto City Council members. They agreed 6-1 to spend $15,000 on a 2-month publicity blitz to start soon to cut down on eyesores dotting many corners of town. Whether law enforcement officers will enforce the law is another matter. Police Lieutenant Tim Atchley told the council that citing cart nappers would take officers away from other chores. Even if officers did issue citations and prosecutors agreed to prosecute, a misdemeanor conviction is likely to result in very little jail time or a small fine, he said. The publicity plan pushed by store owners will include notices and utility bills, shopping bags, police newsletters, neighborhood watch newsletters, and bee advertisements. The council also will pay for cable television and radio commercials, plus signs on city buses inside and out. In January, officials will coordinate a citywide sweep to gather all stray carts. By then, they expect to have adopted a new law requiring store owners to form a partnership and hire a single cart retrieval service for the future. The idea was modeled after a successful program piloted by San Mateo. Many homeless recyclers push carts full of cans and bottles near the business of Don Francis Central Valley Recycling and leave them huddled in unsightly groups. Stanislaus County officials get on his case to get rid of the eyesores, he said, so he rounds them up and calls the stores. Only two retailers, Save Mart and Food for Less, will pick up their own carts. Francis said he can't get permission to destroy them or give them to winos, so he crushes them without permission and throws them in the scrap steel bin. Virginia Magana, supervisor of the city's neighborhood transportation or preservation unit, said most abandoned carts are taken from store lots by people who wheel their groceries home. We're not picking on poor people, Magana said. Homeless people are highly visible, but they're a small part of the problem. Again, I have a credibility problem with some of these folks, but I am presenting their statements to you at face value. San Francisco is doing something similar about shopping carts. Originally, they were stealing carts from people and then giving them tickets. Santa Cruz does something similar. You heard a report about Officer Perry, or RoboCop, going after people near the Staff of Life Morrissey Safeway. I played that interview a couple of weeks ago. Rather kind of bizarre and absurd, but there you are. So that's a kind of a report from Modesto. I'm sorry there is not more meat to that. There is some interesting stuff coming down the pike, however. Let me give you a schedule of what's happening for the next week, as far as I can tell, although, as usual, the Sentinel is getting it wrong, so do not believe your Sunday Sentinel when you see an absence of a city council meeting on Tuesday. Second and fourth Tuesdays of every month almost invariably have city council meetings, and this coming Tuesday, October 27th, is no exception. There's going to be a long meeting with lots of stuff on it. It looks like the folks are rushing to get stuff through, that is to say our 5-2 Rotkin-Matthews majority, before the election, including, I'm just looking over this thing, including resolution increasing the maximum participative certificate of participation for, let me get this straight here. It looks like $11 million to construct a parking garage at the city's Soquel Front parking garage and refunding the 1990 certificate of participation relating to golf course improvements and acquisition in the east side parking lot. Again, you know, it's hard for me to interpret these things. I just note huge sums of money being transferred here and there. Then there is a item 14 is a budget. Let's go to item 12. Contract for services to prepare new zones with performance standards to implement City Council action of October 20th on the beach south of Laurel Comprehensive Area Plan. Yes, that's it, folks. That's the BSAL plan from which supposedly all the bad things were removed because of the wonderful victory by the people. And, of course, you've heard here that we have had no such victory. We have had a stalling action, a delaying action. We have forced them to hold back until after the election, I thought. But no, they're going ahead before the election. What do they plan to do? Well, this resolution authorizes the city manager to execute a contract in the amount not to exceed $50,000, more or less, with the FIPS group for the purpose of providing planning services to implement the zoning changes approved for the beach and south of Laurel for the 1, development of overlay zones for conservation and historic neighborhood areas, 2, development of a new residential zone, RTE, for the beach flats. I believe that's the zone that will allow Canfield to commercially develop formerly residential areas. 3, development of commercial overlay zones which control and guide development and incorporate new performance standards, strengthen neighborhood commercial zoning. Again, commercial zoning. Review and modify permitted uses in current zoning to ensure compatibility with the goals of the plan. In other words, this is a quick attempt to put into practice the BSAW plan before the election. You might say, well, the 3 main problems, the 3rd Street realignment, the boardwalk expansion, and the commercial redevelopment, the commercial expansion have all been removed. What's the problem? Well, as I pointed out, they haven't been removed. They have been referred to the Beach Committee, which is run by none other than Michael Hernandez. The so-called public process that they are going to give us will be determined by the Beach Committee and does not provide, for example, for resident input, which was the key thing that we feel is essential. If you're going to destroy people's homes for their own good, you want to talk to them about it first rather than move them out and discuss it later. Just what our Matthews Rodkin City Council didn't do. There's also a real problem in that the EIR has been passed and it covers all these projects even though they weren't included in the plan. So zippity-doo-dah, they can bring back the projects and zip right through them without an EIR requirement. They can go right ahead with that. So all they need to do is elect Linda Steinau. They elect Linda Steinau on November 3rd. They've got the beach south of Laurel plan. For those of you who favor the plan, you should vote for Steinau. No question about it. She will put it through. And if you want to get in Canfield's banker, Quartararo, put him in as well. He's running for that. And he's actually more honest than Steinau. I'm going to be playing you a series of questions shortly that were asked of candidates at the last City Council Candidates Forum, which was up at the university about 2 or 3 nights ago. I guess it was Wednesday night. Students held it. It wasn't terribly well attended. About 50 or 60 students were there, and some of us old Politico junkies. And they asked the question, what was your position on the beach plan before the October 7th, October 20th votes, which confirmed the October 7th vote? What is your position now? And they gave some pretty interesting answers. The most obnoxious answer you'll hear, at least for my money, was from Linda Steinau, who said, I've always favored what they did and blah, blah, blah. Whereas Quartararo at least had the courage and the integrity to say that he favored a bad plan from the beginning, and he still favors it. And that's honesty from his point. I told him afterwards, even though I disagreed with him, and I do regard him as Canfield's banker, that I respect him for being honest about it. Walton did a similar kind of flopping around on the issue. It's kind of really disgusting to see these candidates running to cater to the audiences that they're talking to, but I suppose that's politics. You're going to hear more from me about that. I got a call from Battling Bob LaMonica. I know he always gets real annoyed with me when I call him that, and I guess someday I'll grow up and stop calling him that, but he called in. He wanted to do some talking about this on the air, and I'm inviting him to call back and discuss his point of view. Bob is not your average Free Radio Santa Cruz listener, although he frequently calls in. He takes a different point of view. He favors ending the sleeping ban and has worked for that end with the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative throughout the last year. But he is also, I believe he's a fan of Jane Walton's and maybe of Linda Steinau's. Maybe he can give us some particular insight into why we should go completely nuts and vote for those people. If he's listening, he's invited to call in, and as is anyone else, a call-in number, which I should have been announcing and have not been, but will now announce, is 427-3772. That's 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is your civil rights station, not just your civil rights program, and that's, of course, my particular interest. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, called Bathrobes Pierre, sort of a combination of the bathrobe that we wear at sleeping van demonstrations when we try to get through the skulls of these thick politicians that everybody has to sleep at night, even poor people, and if you haven't got a legal place, you have to sleep somewhere. That's something we've been trying to press through to Michael Rodkin, the great I'm a socialist guy, for many, many a moon without success. And Robespierre, of course, was the radical in the French Revolution who, during the, I guess, during the most intense phase of the French Revolution in 1793 and 94, when the poor people had the most power, was pushing for poor people's rights. He was also, however, a government fanatic who was also executing opponents right and left, and mostly left and left as well, unfortunately. And so somebody calling me Bath Robespierre is really kind of a joke. Robespierre is not a pleasant name for many because it draws up memories of the terror in France, which was the radical attempt to impose human rights by force. Ah, we have an incoming call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering if you could comment a little bit on now Prop 5 and what your position is. And,
before you go off the air, remind me what Prop 5 is.
That's the proposition that would give the Indians more say over their reservations as far as gambling rights.
Sure, but maybe you'd like to comment on it too, Carl. You obviously have a perspective, right?
Well, there seems to be a lot of confusion about what is, both Florida gets, there seems to be a lot of tribes, on both sides, and it seems to be pretty much a big issue on both sides for all tribes, and I guess that's what I was looking for.
Are you planning to vote for it or against it?
I'm gonna vote for it, but I was interested to
hear my point of view.
Maybe have more coverage from from tribe people on both sides. I don't know if there's a contingent,
Sure, I'll be happy to comment on it. I'm kind of ignorant. Do you want me to comment on the phone or on the air, or actually we're on the air now?
I'm thinking on the air, and I was wondering if I could also encourage you to maybe get some feedback from some of the tribal people in the area.
Sure, I'd be happy to, let me put it this way. I'm certainly going to invite people to call in, and particularly people who are associated with Native American tribes, because that's who this measure affects.
Right. Okay, thanks very much.
Sure.
On the other hand, this, of course, is not exactly on key target to which is my main subject, namely civil rights for poor people and homeless people. But sure, let me give you my view. I'm really ignorant on the issue. First of all, I want to say I've recently read a kind of a summary of issues in the San Francisco Bay Guardian, and that's what I'm relying on in my brief statement on this Proposition 5. And it's not really that educated a statement, so understand that. The Proposition 5 has to do with allowing gambling and casinos in certain Native American reservations. Again, I'm not even clear how far this extends or how this would change the existing situation. And frankly, for the purposes of my show, I don't really care too much about it. But my understanding is that the measure is funded, it's an attempt to restore sovereignty to Native American tribes around the issue of gambling. Now, whether the money's gotten by the gambling is controlled by some Uncle Tom groups that don't get the funding to the masses of Indian peoples, and is one question. Another question is whether whether gambling itself is a good thing, whether it isn't in fact kind of a regressive tax on poor people like the lottery. That's a significant question. And then the third question has to do with who's for it and who's against it. Where's the money on this measure? I'd say the money, as I understand it, at least on one side, is coming from the Las Vegas casinos who want to shut the Indian reservations out. That would be the reason to vote in favor of it. But I said this morning I favored yes, because I believe in sovereignty for the Indian peoples on this. But I'm frankly not clear on the issue. I got to be honest with you. I really need more information. I know that a good friend of mine suggested that the gambling issue was even more important, and that it was a great regressive tax on poor people, and that as such it should be opposed, because when you encourage people to gamble, you're encouraging them to give away money and get nothing in return, generally speaking. So I guess, caller, my answer is I don't know.
But I hope I've talked a little bit about it and given you some idea. Again, my reflections on the issue come from the San Francisco Bay Guardian, which you can't really get too easily locally. It's a San Francisco weekly, which has a lot of good information. Sometimes you can find it at the Ultramat downtown, the laundromat at Pacific and Laurel Streets, but frequently it's not there. I don't know if the library carries it. I guess that's all I can tell you on that issue. Let me hope that that's helped you. And return to local issues, which to me are, of course, my bread and butter on this show. I'm concerned about the city council candidates. I'm still, even though I'm beginning to find lots of problems, supporting the team of Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar for your vote on November 3rd. That's because I think they're the best chance of changing the direction of the city council, not just on redevelopment, Beach South of Laurel Plan, Terrace Point, Bombay, Mission Street widening, but I think they're probably much more accessible to understanding the police abuse that ordinary poor and homeless people suffer downtown, the kind of blank check that's been given to Chief Belcher, and of course at the county level to Mark Tracy, but that's not, of course, covered by the city council. And they're also the best ones on the sleeping ban issue, even though they have been waffling significantly in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And yes, Keith Sugar, you too have been waffling, I'm sorry, and you need to be called on it, and you will be called on it, and so will the rest of you folks, whether you're right, left, or center, because that's what we have to do. Unfortunately, the homeless issue has not been made a significant issue in this campaign. And certainly, homeless advocates and civil rights folks like myself bear some responsibility for this, though we've been trying to raise the issue. You know, there haven't been many homeless people at forums. I think there was nobody at the student forum. One of the shames of the student forum on Wednesday was there was not one question really relating to homeless students on campus, the sleeping ban, the downtown ordinances, which make it illegal to sit down near a shop or peacefully, that's peacefully, Bob LaMonica, ask for a dime after dark. That's the Kennedy-Rotkin law. That is illegal, and I'm sure it would be the Walton-Steinau law if those people got in, and I hope you don't let them get in, whoever's out there listening to my voice. There essentially are two slates. There's Walton-Steinau and Quartararo on one side, and there's Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar on the other, and Clark is also on the other, but the problem is Clark is... he's a kind of a spoiler candidate at this point. Even Kennedy supports him, and Kennedy is, of course, a big Steinau fan, and a fan of that other. He wants to get people in to support this anti-homeless, pro-development slate. Well, we got an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hail the progressive slate.
Bob LaMonica. How are you doing, Bob?
Well, doing well, Robert.
Good.
And I think it would be interesting to discuss the differences in the candidates and why one might approach candidates individually.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is important. This slate, this idea of a progressive slate, is the first way that's used to justify waffling.
Mm-hmm.
We're progressive, therefore we can waffle.
Yeah, well, I mean, they claim they're not waffling. I think they are. On the sleeping ban, anyway. And the problem is we haven't educated them on the other issues, like police review, like the fact that we have a police chief who's violating the law, we have poor people shot dead without independent investigation, Happy John Dine, whose anniversary of his shooting is coming up on the 12th.
As a point of note here, didn't the Sentinel even advocate an independent review in that case?
Originally it did, yeah. But of course it quickly jumped on board the rubber stamp bandwagon, and the reason was it looked so obvious that there was, you know, the original statements by Chief Belcher and District Attorney Art Danner were so outrageously at variance with what all the witnesses said. They said that they saw a Happy John Dine pointing a weapon in a combat stance visible to witnesses at officers carry and or over, and that therefore he had to be stopped from what appeared to be a threat and turned out later to be a toy gun. Then, of course, when the Police Review Board didn't do an independent investigation, didn't do an early investigation, didn't do public hearings, but what it did do was it, in private, I would say, I call it in secret, but of course it was, and they knew, people we knew they were doing it, so I guess it's not secret, but behind closed doors, they investigated the police reports, and the police reports, they came up with the conclusion that he wasn't pointing a weapon, he was reaching for a weapon. But of course, this contradicts the testimony of witnesses who say that Officer Over took something out of Gein's belt after he was shot down and threw it on the ground. His fanny pack, I should say. Not his belt. Beg your pardon.
We're coming up on the anniversary of the death, too, aren't we?
Correct. November 12th, I believe.
November 12th. I think that the least that can be advocated in that situation was improper police procedures occurred.
What is Belcher doing covering the police department? You know, actually, he covered it 2 hours after the shooting, but his final statement. Well, his interim statement came out 24 hours later, and then within a week and a half or 2 weeks, he made a final statement, which he's never corrected. He's never indicated that there's some interesting discrepancy between what he said and what the Citizens Police Review Board said, and then of course even worse, the Citizens Police Review Board has not pointed out the discrepancy. In fact, I intend to write Chief Belcher a letter and ask him if his position has changed, and if it's not, I will file a formal complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board when they will get to officially rubber stamp Belcher's position, which will, of course, contradict what they said. Or they will say, maybe they'll say there's no difference between his position and their position, when there clearly is.
I wanted to come back to the waffling.
Yes, the waffling
issue. Okay, mm-hmm. Which is important.
Yeah.
And what happens when a candidate thinks that she or he has a shot of winning? Is that then they begin to back off from their earlier positions.
Sure, that's definitely true. We see it in the case of Linda Steinau, who was outright lying at the student forum. I'm going to play you this tape coming up about all of them give answers on the beach south of Laurel Plan. And you'll see Steinau and Walton, in essence, sound like they're lying. Quartararo is more candid. I disagree with all their positions on the beach area south of Laurel, but these two women are disgraceful. What they're aware of is, of course, is that they're playing to an audience, the voters, that doesn't want anything to do with these beach south of Laurel mega developments, certainly not under the lack of public process that's been pursued so far. So they're now claiming, oh, that was our position all along, which of course it was not. Walton has supported this strongly, and so has Steinau. But they're lying about it, and that is what makes me real anxious about these two women.
Well, apply the same principle to the progressive slate, and then maybe we can talk objectively.
Okay, well, let's talk about that.
It's sad that integrity doesn't have political marketability. I mean, I'll grant you that, Robert.
I'm sorry, say that.
Well, political integrity. You know, say what you mean what you say.
Yeah.
Be above board. Mm-hmm. Don't be shoddy.
Right.
Don't play the polls and watch.